knew we were about to die. For all that, I have to give my troops credit. They followed my orders despite the fact they felt sure it was going to get them killed. If that's not loyalty, what is? Our crappy gun began firing, and the computer colored in a thin line of yellow to show what effect it was having. The short answer was, not much. "We missed?" I asked. "We missed again?"
"We're at extreme range still," Natasha explained.
"We're almost on top of them. We're not more than 20,000 kilometers off her stern." She shrugged helplessly.
"The target is still shifting. My predictive software..."
"Open a channel with the AI," I said. "Then when it replies, lock on the beam. That should help give us a clue." Wincing, she worked her computer, which in turn worked the NARB boards. All the touch interface icons on the NARB computers were huge, about the size of a human palm. I guess it was hard to delicately operate a touch screen with a flipper.
"Channel opened."
"Hey," I called out. "AI ship, your planet is burned away to dust. Why are you still fighting?"
"Mission parameters not met yet," the machine answered.
"What's your mission, then, if not to protect the planet?"
"Primary mission failed. Secondary mission, destroy all intruders. Secondary mission in progress."
I turned to Natasha. "Did you get a lock?" She nodded to me. Her face was ashen. I think she knew what I was going to say next. "Good," I said. "Now kick it in the ass." She turned back to her boards and she laid her hands directly on the NARB icons. She used her entire palm, making large arm motions to reach high enough. After about 5 touches, the pencil-thin yellow line leapt out again, but this time it connected our ship to the bigger AI vessel. For about a second, no one breathed, but then we relaxed a little as there was no immediate reaction.
"Do it again," I told Natasha.
"Hey, guys..."
It was Carlos. He'd come close and was pointing up to the big board. The AI ship was turning. She was coming about. Perhaps her frontal gun port only aimed forward. Maybe the centerline gun emplacement ran the length of the ship and had limited flexibility when targeting. Anyway, she was still dancing, as she did, a 180 to face us. It was a sight to see. All hellfire was blazing away at her stern, but the enemy fleet was a good 1,000,000 kilometers off still and spread out, too. They were nowhere near as close to the AI as we were, so they were still missing. But we'd landed a glove on the big vessel. Sure, it had been a paltry, glancing blow. No damage had been registered. Hell, we'd barely caused the stern shields to flicker. But she'd noticed us. That much was more than clear.
"Do we run, sir?"
Natasha asked me.
"Dodge. Give it all you've got. Lay in a course to warp out in the meantime."
"That ship will toast us, James,"
Carlos said at my side. We'd been together for a long, long time. He and I went so far back I could hardly remember the first time I'd bashed him in the mouth. But he'd almost never used the voice he was using now, or called me by my first name, either. He sounded serious, concerned, and thoughtful. That made me give him my full attention.
"Look," I said, "we've got to take another shot. If we don't, none of this will look real."
"If it hits us," Carlos said, "we probably won't catch a revive on Earth for a decade. Maybe never."
"I know. Ride with me, specialist. One last time."
He slapped me on the shoulder, but his lips were a tight line.
"Okay, cabrón."
Looking back to the forward screen, I saw the AI ship was fully aligned. That forward gun port, it was glowing a purplish color. Then, the gun port blazed, and a gush of energy lanced out. Natasha slapped at her controls, literally like a seal beating on a drum, and our tiny ship moved in random jinks and swirls. The AI ship phased, dancing, and the purple beam cut from one part of the heavens crosswise to another. We were like a buzzing fly caught in the middle of that vicious, sudden slash of power. Chapter 60. I have to admit, I had my eyes squeezed almost shut. My gauntlets were gripping the back of Natasha's chair like they were welded there. But then the beam was past us. It blazed with blinding color over the screen, and we were angling off and accelerating past the AI ship's flank.
Jesus, Carlos breathed. That thing shaved our fins off.
Going to warp, Natasha shouted.
No, no, I shouted. Hold on, contact the battle fleet.
She glanced up at me with wide eyes. She had that expression I knew too well, the one that said she thought I was insane.
Do it, I ordered.
The AI ship took a few seconds to turn around last time. We're past her, and she'll have to reorient. As I spoke, she was obeying, connecting me up to a new galactic channel. For about 2 seconds, our channel request pulsed and was ignored.
Give it another,
I began, but then they answered.
This is Grand Admiral Satikas,
an imposing Magua said. He was on screen now, and he didn't look pretty. I doubted his own brood mother could have approved of his bloated body and wattled, squirming limbs. He looked old and fat, even for a Magua.
Hello, Mr. Grand Admiral, I called out. I'm Centurion James McGill, and I've assumed command of this vessel.
Put me in contact with Magnate Slur,
the Grand Admiral demanded.
Well, you see, sir, the crew is all dead.
Rebel slaves,
Satikas rasped out.
It is as I conjectured. We've been watching your—
Hold on, Grand Admiral, hold on, I said, throwing my arms high. We're not rebels. We're just the last people aboard this ship. The crew was killed by the actual rebels on this planet. They used X-rays to kill everyone aboard.
Grand Admiral Satikas fell quiet for a second or two, and his nasty cluster of eyes crawled over the unfamiliar faces of my troops.
Animals, run the ship,
the Magua demanded.
Is this true? Who ordered the attack on the enemy vessel?
I did, sir. We're your local enforcers in Province 921. We're—
Silence, creature. Here are your orders. You will wheel and strike the ship again. You are distracting it, and you're allowing our fleet to close. Continue your actions.
Yes, sir, I said. As long as we're able, we will do so.
I did not specify.
Frantically, I made a cut-off motion to Natasha, who caught on quickly and aborted the connection.
Now, I said, dance like a monkey on a hot stove. We'll take one more shot, then we'll run.
What if it cuts us in half?
Carlos complained. I glanced at him. Then just maybe the Magua will spare Earth due to our sacrifice.
Oh, right.
We could hardly breathe or swallow as the battle continued, if you could call it that. It was more like a teasing session. We felt like a chihuahua trying to piss off a grizzly bear. Our ship danced and cavorted while we held on to straps and seats shaped all wrong for our bodies. We didn't even bother to fire anymore. All Natasha's attention was riveted on dodging that deadly, slashing beam. It occurred to us all at once, after about 30 seconds, that the AI wasn't trying all that hard to hit us.
Is it even shooting at us? I asked.
No, Natasha said. It appears to have shifted its attention to the real threat, the battle fleet. It's killed 20 more of them. And James, I have bad news. The Magua fleet is in range now. They'll start saturating this area with radiation any second now.
We glanced at each other and I nodded.
Time to pull out. Go to warp.
It's not safe this close to a gravity well. We're not aligned toward any destination. If we
go to warp, damn it, girl.
She did so, and we flashed out of existence. As far as the other ships were concerned, we no longer existed. We were inside an Alcubierre warp bubble, drawn through space itself inside a low-pressure pocket of space that sucked us forward at terrific speeds.
Warp back in, I said about a minute later.
Everyone had just begun to relax, sigh, and open their helmets. They choked when they heard my words.
Don't tell me we're going back into that shitstorm,
Carlos complained. We promptly came back in a normal space. We were far from Arcturus IV, far from the battle, but still in the same star system.
Align our helm, Natasha. Take your time, then warp us out for home.
She smiled at me at last.
You think the Magua will buy all this? She asked.
Let's send a final transmission to Grand Admiral Satikas to make sure.
When she had the channel open, it was a one-way transmission. We were too far out to hold a normal conversation. The radio signal would take several minutes to reach the battle fleet. "Grand Admiral Satikas," I said, "we're your loyal allies and enforcers from Earth. We fought closer to the enemy than any ship in your fleet. We are almost unarmed, and we are damaged. We had to retreat, as your other ships have done throughout this glorious battle. We wish you well from Earth, and we will no doubt celebrate your victory soon. Centurion James McGill, out."
"Ha!" Carlos shouted when I was done. He came forward, clapped me on an armored shoulder, and beamed into my faceplate. "That was grade-A Georgia horseshit if I've ever heard of, McGill. If we live, I owe you a beer."
"I'll take you up on that when we get home, Ortiz." While Natasha sweated to figure out our navigational parameters, I took the time to watch the battle unfold. The AI ship had done incredibly well. It had taken out close to a third of the enemy strength. Now, however, the Galactics were in too close. They had their main batteries in play, and they were scoring hits. It was clear the AI ship was doomed.
"Warp out," I ordered.
"What?"
"Now, before the damned Magua win this."
Natasha didn't slow me down to tell me how she wasn't ready yet. She just jumped on it. That's what I liked in a trooper of any rank, action under fire. We vanished again and left Arcturus in our wake. I hoped never to return to this star system, and I doubted I ever would. After all, there was nothing left here other than a ripped-up husk of a planet and some floating probes. As we slid away to safety, my mind drifted to think of Florimel. She'd said she would live on with us. I supposed she meant in spirit. I vowed to remember her, as I remembered so many I'd seen perish and die their final deaths. Overcome with fatigue, injuries, and a sense of sadness mixed with relief, I fell asleep in a dry Nair bathtub. With my faceplate open, I dozed while others chattered and high-fived each other. Everyone was relieved to be heading away from this whole mess. Only Natasha seemed nervous, I thought, as my mind slipped away to dream. She was still trying to figure out how to control this ship. Hoping she could get it right, I slid into a quiet, dark dream. Chapter 61. It took us about a week to get home. It was a rough ride, if the truth were to be told. We didn't have any human amenities. No showers, no changes of clothing. We were stuck in our battle suits the whole time, and we were getting pretty ripe by the time we reached old Earth. Sure, we could have taken our clothes off to bathe in one of those Nair bathtubs, but no one wanted to try it. You see, the Nairbs didn't seem to like clean water. Their water was more swampy, like something a manatee would feel right at home in. Particulate matter and an unfiltered gray-green slime was our only option on hand to fill these tubs. Fortunately, our suits were equipped with emergency filtration systems. We could draw enough moisture and process it to keep us alive indefinitely. We just didn't smell too good. During that long week, I tried my luck with just about every girl left alive on the ship. For some reason, they weren't interested. Maybe it was the fact we weren't bathing anymore. For myself, I figured that shouldn't have stopped anybody. Hell, if both partners stank, that pretty much canceled out the problem in my mind. But the women disagreed, so I was left frustrated and bored until we came into sight of our home star system.
"James!"
Natasha called out the moment we came out of warp. Right off, I knew something undesirable was afoot, not only because she called me by my first name, but also because there was a twinge of fear in her voice.
"What?"
"Oh," I said, viewing the screens. Ships swarmed Earth. Hundreds of them. They were so thick in numbers and size that they looked like an asteroid swarm in a tight orbit.
"Is Earth?"
I asked her. Natasha worked her boards feverishly.
No, not yet. There's no sign of radiation, and the atmosphere is no more stirred up than usual.
We all breathed sighs of relief.
What are we going to do?
Natasha asked me. I was no starship captain, but I knew I had to make some hard choices and act like one. You think they know we are in system yet? I asked her.
Probably.
Damn it. I hoped to beat them here. This scout ship should be faster than the battle wagons. She shrugged.
It probably is, but I'm no master at operating a Nerb vessel. Those warships were built by shipyards in the core systems. Even if they're outdated by Magua standards, they can still move fast.
Right. Well, we can't just run off now. Move toward Earth like we own the place. Natasha bent to her work. Soon the big ship turned, lurched into gear, and headed toward Earth. It didn't take more than a few hours before everyone took notice of us, and old Grand Admiral Satikas himself was on the screen again.
Centurion,
Natasha whispered to me before I had the chance to say hello.
Central wants to talk to you.
Right, but I can't be rude. Conference up the calls.
What is this delay?
Satikas demanded.
Why am I being kept waiting by beasts?
I'm sorry, Grand Admiral, I said. We're not a professional starship crew.
That is a lie,
he said flatly. Alarmed, I looked around the room. I'd told a lot of lies in my life, some only this morning, but this time I'd spoken the God's honest truth. What did I say that was wrong?
We observed your maneuvering in battle firsthand. It was masterful and brave beyond description. I've had two of my own captains flayed and killed repeatedly while they were forced to observe your example. They will be revived when the process is finished with two steps lost in rank.
This was all news to me, and it was somewhat disturbing, but I've never been a man to pass up on praise.
You think we did pretty well, then? I asked.
Did you hear that, Central? Are you recording this?
We are, McGill,
said a pissed-off and very familiar feminine voice. It was none other than Galina Turov. Seeing her again made me wonder how she'd recovered her rank and position back at Central after the failed invasion of Earth. That woman was twice as slippery as Winslade, but at least she was pretty. Natasha put Turov up on the screen, split with the Magua Admiral. It was quite a comparison.
Grand Admiral, she said, I want to apologize for all of Earth regarding any problems McGill might have caused you. He's a disobedient braggart who—
Silence, creature.
The Magua boomed.
He is your best. He is your finest. He all but committed suicide before my eyes at my slightest whim, an exemplary minion. If I possessed 1,000 like him, I'd have won our recent conflict in the core.
Galina shut up. Her face went red and her lips were a tight line, but she stopped talking and shook her head in disbelief.
Now, McGill,
Satikas went on,
I haven't been able to tell you how pleased I was with your attack. You single-handedly saved me 100 ships, if my strategists are to be believed.
Really? I said. I thought it might have been more like 200. The Magua made farting sounds and quivered. I assumed he was laughing.
Yes, that's the spirit. It makes my duty now all the sadder.
What duty is that, sir?
Why, the removal of your species, of course. It's always like this on the frontier. A promising, aggressive breed is identified. Rather than attacking the yoke and cinching it tight, the prissy beings from the home stars begin to flap their limbs and bleat about regulations.
I swallowed hard, sensing the importance of the next few moments of this conversation. Galina had changed her attitude as well. She'd gone white now rather than the flushed red of anger, but she was still staying quiet. Her eyes studied me, and they were pleading. Taking in a breath, I puffed out my chest and regarded Satikas. To me, he seemed more grounded and reasonable than your average, snooty galactic.
"Well, sir," I said, "perhaps we can work something out. What's the nature of the problem, exactly?"
"It's very simple, really. You've fought hard and well, but you've also spawned technology that is dangerously advanced. That AI ship, it was as good as our best back home."
"You've got that kind of tech?" I asked. "With the phasing, the lateral slashing of that beam, and..."
"Yes, yes, of course," he said. "Did you really think this collection of rust buckets was the pride of the Magua fleet? Hardly. Battlefleet 921 is made up of outdated patrol boats. We don't need our main battle line ships out here on the frontier, you see."
The funny thing was, I did see. Empires always operated like this. Back in Earth history, Europeans had their best armies arrayed along their borders in Europe. Out of the bush, they sent cast-offs along with soldiers that needed discipline. The colonial officers weren't always the favored sons back then either. They were people the rulers were just as happy to place in an outpost in the weeds. It occurred to me that Satikas himself had to be just such a creature. He was probably irritating to his fellows back home. An old warrior who was so blunt, so practical, and so intolerant of foppish behavior, he was a liability in the Emperor's court. Because he was effective, they'd given him a command, but he'd been assigned to the worst of duties due to his personality. I could commiserate with old Satikas. Under different circumstances, I might even have been able to call him a friend. But today was a special day, and I had to get my mind into gear. "So," I said, "you're saying that because the rogues built that ship, we all have to go?"
"I'm afraid so. It's a typical situation, really. I must apologize for discipline that may seem strict to you. That display of firepower is unacceptable on the frontier. There are other violations, of course, but that one cinched your fate."
"Hmm," I said, chewing it over. All around me, my crew was pale. They'd looked like they were already dead. They knew we couldn't fight the battle fleet. Sure, there were only about 800 mainline vessels left, but our navy consisted of less than 100 ships. Not to mention, we were easily outclassed by the Galactics, in addition to outnumbered. No, this had to be done without fireworks. The problem was figuring out how.
"Well then," Satikas said, giving himself a shake, "time's pressing. If you would be so kind as to fly your ship into your local star, I'd be grateful. I'll go so far as to put a positive footnote into my log about your species."
I said, "that's a mighty fine offer, Grand Admiral, but if you could indulge me for just a few more moments, I promise not to pester you for long." He made a rasping sound. I thought it might be a sigh.
"Be quick about it."
"Yes, sir. Firstly, why didn't you dust off Earth already? Surely you've got plenty of planet busters on board for the purpose?"
"Thousands of them," Satikas assured me. "We've plotted out the precise placement, enough to be sure, but not wasteful. No more than 50 will do the job. The atmosphere will be gone, the oceans boiled off. But we don't have to dig down to the magma. That's inefficient overkill, and I won't have it."
"Good thinking. But you didn't exactly answer my question, sir. Why'd you wait?"
"I thought that was abundantly clear, creature. Perhaps I overestimated your cognitive powers, but no matter. We waited for your ship to return here. Otherwise, we'd have needed to go off searching for it. Fortunately, you saved us that valuable time. I'll think of it as a final service on your stellar record."
"I live to serve," I said. But there's another thing bothering me.
Really, be quick about it.
Why is Earth being blamed for the actions of the rogues?
Blamed. You're not being blamed. You're being credited. That's just as bad in this case, of course. The rogue animals were human. You're human. Therefore, all humans must be expunged.
Ah, I said, brightening. I think I've put my finger on the source of our mutual problem, sir. The rogues weren't human. Not at all. They might have looked human, but I assure you, they were not. The Magua studied me for a second. I heard another chattering voice off to his left, and I thought to see just a flash of a green flipper. Could this guy have Nerbs aboard, telling him what kind of protocols he could and could not break? I bet he did. We all had our masters in the end.
You are in error, Satika said. I've just gotten confirmation. My science team is 99% sure you're a match. There are no preserved specimens to study, unfortunately, but judging by habits, appearance, and a dozen other parameters, my crew...
What about DNA? I asked. What if there is a significant variance in our DNA?
Satikas ruffled himself. That would be conclusive, of course, but as there is no DNA to test...
Hold on, I said. I've got some DNA. A small sample, but it might be enough.
Everyone aboard my ship stared at me. So did Satikas. He looked annoyed, but it was hard to decipher the expressions of a Magua. That green, flippered bastard off to his left began chattering again. Satikas listened and then turned back to the view screen.
Are you making a formal motion to stay action on the basis of new physical evidence?
I am, I said loudly.
This is most unusual. It's more than that. It's troublesome. I'm almost ready to take back all the praise I so recently heaped upon you and your squalid little species, McGill.
I'm really terribly sorry to give you trouble, Grand Admiral, I said, but this is rather important to me and my people.
Typical self-centeredness, he complained. I'm seeing it everywhere. In fact, I'm going to strike the positive note from my log after your species is eradicated.
That'd be a sad thing, sir, I said. But I can understand how you feel. Now, what's the next step in resolving our motion for a stay?
Things became technical after that, and I stepped back from the view screens. Lawyers showed up at Central, and they argued with the Nerbs. Each side filed briefs, codified rules, and all kinds of other garbage to certify the results of a DNA test as valid. In the meantime, Natasha pulled me aside and whispered harshly in my ear.
I don't know if I can do it, James,
she said, breathing shallowly.
You look like you're in a panic, girl, I said. What's wrong?
Your promise to produce evidence we don't have. That's what. Earth can't do it. They'll quarantine this ship first. That's what they're talking about now. That means we'll have to rely entirely on what we have at hand. You've put me in a terrible spot, James. I mean, don't get me wrong, you did what you had to do. You lied, and...
I gripped her arm. She lifted her eyes to meet mine. I could see that the weight of all the world was on her shoulders. She was in a full-blown anxiety attack, and she could hardly think.
Settle down, I said in a soothing tone. We'll be all right. You don't have to do anything. I've got the evidence. At least I think I do.
She stared at me without comprehension.
You have DNA? From the lab people? Where? Why?
I said, feeling slightly embarrassed.
Well, you know how we haven't taken showers for days.
I'm still wearing the same clothes I had on the day we left Arcturus IV. I stopped there and I stared into her eyes. I knew she was a smart girl. She would figure it out eventually. When she finally did, she slapped me, and I smiled sheepishly. Chapter 62. Natasha's hand pulled back for another swing, but I caught her wrist. I did it gently so I wouldn't break it. I actually had practice with that maneuver, having been slapped by any number of angry women on various occasions. "You should be happy," I told her. Still breathing hard, she dropped her eyes and her hand fell to her side.
"You're telling me you've got Florimel's DNA in your pants, aren't you?"
she demanded.
"You pig!"
"That's right. At least, it should still be measurable.
I'm not going to do it," she said, crossing her arms. "I'm not going to dissect your disgusting underwear to prove anything."
"Natasha, you probably won't have to. They'll send up some kind of expert or something." She aimed a trembling finger at the view screen.
"You haven't been listening, have you? You never listen."
"Well, I heard some parts."
"Right. They've decided no representatives from either party will be allowed to handle the evidence on this ship, on the grounds it might introduce contamination. They want a joint delegation to come here and observe while we extract and display the test results ourselves."
"Hmm," I said, chewing that over. "That does sound indiscreet. But listen, we might be saving all of humanity. You should be happy I've got an alibi for us."
"It's still upsetting, James."
"Yeah, I understand. I guess I've got a weakness for a pretty face. You know that. Everyone does." Natasha sighed. She still wasn't meeting my eyes, and it made me feel bad. I'd had a thing for her for years. She'd felt the same way for much longer. I didn't want to hurt her, but I needed her to help make this thing go right. "I'm sorry," I said quietly. "I'm a jackrabbit when it comes to women. I understand how you might hate that. But you and I haven't been together for a long time. And on this single occasion, my character flaw might actually help save Earth."
"I'm glad, in a way," she admitted. "Okay, I'll do it. But I'm telling you, James McGill has got as my witness, if this doesn't work out and they decide to dust off Earth after all, I'm going to kill you personally, as my final action."
Smiling, I took out my sidearm, handed it to her butt first, and nodded. "In that case, you can be my guest, specialist."
"You realize this evidence might not help us. The rogues were based on humans genetically. They appear to be adapted from our line, manipulated artificially. But who knows how the Nerves will judge such a case?"
"If you've got a better play, you'd better make it known right now." Natasha sighed.
"Find a plastic bag or something. They're shipping up a genetics kit both sides have approved of. I'm going to do this as a professional."
"That's the spirit," I boomed at her, but she gave me a dirty look. Carlos was ordered to help her as the unit's last surviving bio. When he discovered what the sample was, he freaked out a little.
"No way," he exclaimed. "This has to be some kind of joke. McGill is screwing with us again, isn't he?"
We painstakingly explained the situation to him, and he reluctantly aided Natasha in the procedure.
"You owe me for this, McGill," he said. "If Kiwi and I ever have a baby, you're changing its diapers until he's potty trained."
"You're on, Ortiz. Now get in there and do it right." Grumbling, he worked with Natasha. A few hours went by. That's all it took. Our equipment was pretty good by now, with medical automation having reached advanced stages. I would be the first to admit I was a little nervous when they finished up and turned in the sample with the preliminary results. Natasha herself looked sick.
"How'd it go?"
I asked her. Her face was ashen. She gave her head a tiny shake.
"I did what I could," she said. "But I don't know how this will go, James."
That concerned me. Natasha was a worrier of the first stripe, but she had a handle on technical things like this. If she thought the whole test was a failure, It probably was. More waiting began as Grand Admiral Satikas's crew went to work on the data we'd provided. They took longer to get back to us than Natasha and Carlos had. "They have to be debating the findings," I said, daring to hope. "That's good, isn't it?" Natasha nodded slightly. Something about her demeanor tipped me off. I began to question her about the nature of what she'd found. She'd responded with non-committal, vague statements. Before I could get anything useful out of her, Grand Admiral Satikas finally got back to us. He glowered through the projected image. I didn't know much about Magua emotions, but the way his limbs were squirming, he looked pissed off to me.
"I'm speaking to the McGill?" he asked.
"Yes, Grand Admiral."
"Good. I wanted you online to witness the first of many executions."
My blood went cold. So it was to be killing time. If he asked me to execute my crew, I knew I wouldn't do it. I'd order Natasha to flee or even attack. Sure, our transport couldn't outrun them or do so much as scratch a line on their smallest cruiser's hull, but I wasn't going down without a fight.
"This creature," Satikas continued, "has bitterly failed us."
The camera view shifted to include the figure of a Nairb. The green blob of flesh looked deflated.
"I don't understand these findings, Lord," the Nairb said. "They're impossible to credit."
"Untrue," Satikas bubbled. "It makes perfect sense. I should have known from the moment I saw these brave slaves risking their lives to aid my fleet. Who is forever whining about the incompetence and untrustworthiness of humans? Why, you are, Magnate."
"My grievances have been filed with good cause,"
the Nair bleated through its translator.
"Silence," Satikas boomed. "I've heard enough of your worthless prattle."
So saying, he blasted a smoking hole through the Nairb's head. This startled me, and I have to admit, put a tiny smile on my face.
"He will not be revived,"
the Grand Admiral admonished his crew.
"His file will be purged, and every record of his existence is to be expunged from the treasury of erudition."
I cleared my throat and Satikas whirled back to the camera pickup.
"There," he said. "Did you see? Did you witness justice being done?"
"That was a sight for sore eyes, Grand Admiral," I assured him. "I've never seen a Magua serve galactic law better than you do."
"And it will not end there. Your evidence was conclusive, if shocking. Who would have dreamt the Nairbs were handing Empire secrets to these rogues, as you call them? Who would have believed such treachery was even conceivable to this servile race?"
"Who indeed?" I asked, catching on. I gave Natasha a glance which she didn't return. She was still white-faced and staring straight ahead. Natasha was a rules follower, born and bred. But it was obvious she'd given the Magua Nairb DNA instead of human. Or maybe it was some mix of the two. That she'd pulled it off was the surprising part. People often tried to mimic my trickery, but they typically didn't have the natural flair for it and failed miserably.
"It makes too much sense,"
the Magua continued in the tone of a creature talking to itself.
"How could a collection of animals living in the dark out here on the fringe of the fringe build a ship like that? Impossible, without help. The Nairbs provided the guiding light. My only question now is whether they did it for profit or for worse reasons. Could they be rebels in disguise, snakes hugged to our bosom for so many long centuries?"
"Best to be sure," I told him. "My advice is to torture it out of them. Don't let them squirm and lie either. Give them everything you've got." The Magua took a sudden interest in me. He stopped musing to himself and stared out of the screen for a moment.
"This brings me to my next sadder duty. No doubt you've already surmised what it is.
What? I asked excitedly. Is the battle fleet setting course for the Nairb homeworld, with a dozen planet busters cooking in your hold?
No, Satika said. Only those Nairbs who were on the station here in this frontier province will be exterminated. It's going on right now all over my fleet and throughout the province.
What then, sir? I can't guess.
Loyal, fierce, but stupid,
he said, looking at me closely.
A perfect combination in any trained animal. Such a grim loss for the Empire. We could use more species like the humans, but so often we end up being forced to delete them.
My eyebrows furrowed. I was beginning to get a bad vibe again. I said. What are you talking about, Grand Admiral? Could you spell it out for your most loyal subject?
You humans are to be removed, he said, from the cosmos in your entirety. The rogue creatures were human. The Nairbs gave them illegal tech, that's true. They seem to have mixed genetically with you, disgusting, bestial cloning. But you humans aren't without guilt. Your species accepted this criminal gift. That was your doom.
I blinked at the big ugly face on my screen. The Magua was right. Things weren't going my way today. Chapter 63. Looking around at my team, I saw shocked expressions across the board. We'd all thought we were in the clear, and learning all over again we were about to get snuffed out as a species was hitting them hard. What I was really hoping for was a good idea, as I was fresh out. Natasha was my first stop. I fixed her with a wide-eyed stare. She gave it right back to me, putting up her hands and shrugging in the classic I-don't-know gesture. Next, I swept my gaze over the rest, still hoping. So many weren't on hand, Keevy, Leeson, Graves. Hell, I'd even have welcomed a suggestion from Harris had he been here to share this lovely moment. But he wasn't. None of them were. There was one party to this conversation, however, who'd been keeping uncharacteristically quiet. That was Galina Turov. She chose this moment to speak up.
Grand Admiral,
she called out in a slightly shrill tone. Maybe panic was beginning to set in down there inside Central.
This person, James McGill, he isn't the only party involved. Please speak to us and let us make our case.
That would be a gross error,
Satika said, gesturing aggressively with his foremost pair of appendages. Flaps of his old skin wobbled where his legs met his lumpy body.
Only the McGill has saved your species until now. He performed optimally, and if there was any way to allow the continuance of this deadly variety of beasts, I'd support it. Unfortunately, galactic law is very specific about dangerous animals when they are identified on the frontier. They must be destroyed.
Galina didn't know what to think after that. She stared at Satika's like a deer in the headlights, uncertain if she should argue or shut up to avoid making things worse.
McGill,
hissed a voice to my side. I looked, and I was surprised to see Carlos.
What?
I whispered back.
You remember when we faced our first Nairb, when we fought the Saurian in hand-to-hand at the spaceport on Steelworld?
Blinking, I did recall the moment. We'd gotten into trouble then, and we'd all been ordered to self-execute. The Saurian had done so immediately, but we'd argued until we weaseled out of it.
McGill,
boomed the Grand Admiral. I turned back to the screen, looking dumbfounded. What is it, sir?
Do not besmirch your achievements. Accept your fate with honor. You will be given a footnote, I swear it, and it will be positive in nature. That will be your legacy, and scholars throughout the Empire will be able to find the item in the Imperial Archives, should they choose for some reason to search for it.
That would be a great honor, Your Excellency, I said. I thank you profusely for offering to bless me with such an incalculable gift, but unfortunately I must file a grievance.
A grievance? Growled the Magua. What's this? My estimation of the quality of your species is dropping once again, just upon hearing those words.
I'm sorry, sir, but I feel I must do it. Justice must...
Justice? The Magua demanded. No, no. This is base cowardice, self-serving malignancy. I've been deceived. You are not the servile creature I thought you to be.
Nevertheless, I said, as a citizen of the Empire, I have the right...
No, you don't, Satikas assured me. That regulation has been abused, and it is waived under these circumstances.
Could you explain, sir?
I'm no Nerb. I'm the Grand Admiral of Battlefleet 921. You can't file a grievance only to obstruct justice being meted out against your person. I hereby disallow it. Your species will be exterminated, and now that you've dared to complain, there will be no footnote glorifying your species.
That's a shame, sir, I said. But it has nothing to do with what I'm filing a grievance about. I'm filing on behalf of the Nerbs.
What? The Magua asked in confusion. What for?
For their protection. They are citizens of the Empire as well, aren't they?
Why, of course they are. What exactly is the nature of your grievance?
Their grievance, sir, I said. I wish to file an official grievance on behalf of the Nerbs. You're hereby formally notified of my intention to...
Stop. Stop this foul ejectus flying from your mouth parts. I won't hear any more of this kind of...
About then, a greenish blob popped up its head into view. I saw the Grand Admiral, who was lunging with multiple limbs, violently reach for the Nerb to shove him aside, but the Nerb ducked. I need counsel, I shouted. Official representation and adjudication. The Nerb burbled frantically into the translator. Grand Admiral Satikas, the situation has altered.
Why haven't you been executed?
Satikas complained. The situation has changed, the Nerb repeated. By galactic statute... We must hear out this primitive's grievance. Satikas looked ruffled and angry. His floppy side gills were rising and falling rapidly. I must remind you, sir, the Nerb continued, that every action you take is being recorded and relayed to the Core Worlds. Any violation of galactic law will likely result in harsh penalties.
Harsh penalties? Are you daring to threaten a Magua commander?
Not at all, Grand Admiral. I'm merely informing you of the legal situation and your status within that framework.
Double talk, Satikas fumed. This sort of thing is exactly why I wanted you out of the way.
I'm sorry to disappoint, sir, the Nerb said primly. But I'm quite certain that the human is within his rights to protest on our behalf.
Oh, don't tell me. Now you're going to offer a protest to protect him, aren't you?
The Nerb looked startled. His kind wasn't the corruptible type. They were naturally bureaucratic, more concerned with the rules than the results of their misapplication. I have no such intentions. I'm merely stating the obvious.
Which is?
Grievances on the frontier must be handled by Nerb officials. If you delete all of us in this province, there will be no one to serve this function.
Excellent.
Satikas said, folding a medial limb and drawing out a weapon from his left side.
Then you've discovered the solution to my problems. I'll remove you first, then the humans, as they won't have anyone to appeal to.
The Nerb drew itself up and stood bravely in front of the weapon muzzle as the siding frames fluttered and then locked in on the contours of his bulbous head. That would be unwise, Grand Admiral, he said, and closed his eyes against the bright glare of the targeting mechanism.
Why?
Satikas asked, his optical organs slightly constricted into something like a squint.
It would be construed as a manipulation of justice, a violation of galactic law. Even Magua are subject to it. Upon returning to the core worlds and making your report, you would likely face charges.
The Magua relaxed and wagged a gnarled digit at the Nairb.
I doubt that. My report and the records that will exist at that point in time will show.
I must hereby inform you, the Nairb said in an official tone, that the situation has already been relayed to the Admiralty via deep link.
The Grand Admiral made a gargling noise of shock and rage, which failed to be translated into our language.
You've gone over my head already.
Not at all, I merely—
But Satikas took a swipe at him, forcing the Nairb to retreat.
All right, the Magua said. Never defeated in battle, but always losing to regulations. I'll allow your investigation to proceed.
Puffing up big and green again, the Nairb turned toward me through the camera pickup.
All right, then, he said. Let's hear the details of your grievance. Possibly it will be trivial and tossed out immediately.
Now, one has to understand that I've dealt with the Nairbs before. The right course with them was never to engage quickly, never to get a hard conclusion. Investigations could easily take on a life of their own if you did it right.
Sir,
I said, I must consult legal experts before making my formal complaint. My statements were only meant to serve as a notification of my intentions.
Understood, the Nairb said. Your comprehension of the process impresses us. How long will you need to organize your statement?
5 months, I said.
5 months,
boomed Satikas, unable to contain himself. The Nairb adjusted his flippers.
The Grand Admiral is quite right, he said. It's my educated opinion that a matter of this extreme import can't be formulated so quickly. I would suggest a period of 2 years at a minimum. We are talking about a situation spanning several star systems and a population of many thousands.
Damn straight, I said. The two then fell to arguing, the Grand Admiral aghast at the delay, the Nairb staunchly sticking to his regulations. A light touch on my shoulder made me turn and face Natasha. She had a smile on her lips.
That was masterful, James,
she said in a whisper. I smiled back. That's how you handle 2 ornery swamp snakes. Tie their tails together and let them fight it out. She chuckled, shaking her head. On the screen, the aliens were still going at it. I had the feeling they were going to be doing so for a long time. So I turned down the sound, leaned back in my chair, and took a nap. Chapter 64. The next few days were a whirlwind. The battle fleet was stalemated in a legal battle, and I could almost feel their frustration as I stared out the windows of the highest offices in Central. That Satikas fellow, I said. He's really angry.
That's right, Imperator Turov said. And he's angry with you. I wonder if we could hand you over and get him to give up on the burning earth.
That comment made me turn away from the window. The view through slanted tinted glass had held my attention for a long time. They'd done a lot of reconstruction on Old Central, and the gargantuan pyramid-shaped structure was bigger than ever. You're not serious, I asked her. That kind of appeasement could only serve to whet his appetite. You don't feed a bear part of your sandwich and expect him to go away. He'll stick around wanting it all. Turov glowered at me while Graves and Deitch looked thoughtful.
Don't give me any of your backwoods wisdom, McGill, Turov told me.
She seemed angrier every time I talked to her.
So I shrugged and went back to staring up at the fleet overhead. The galactic ships really were blotting out the sky. There were so many, 800 or more, that people claimed portions of the Earth had dropped a few degrees in temperature over recent weeks due to less sunlight reaching the surface. No one spoke for much of the next several minutes. They did look uncomfortable and uncertain, however. Finally, the man we were all waiting for arrived.
"Equestrian Drusus," Turov said. "So good to see you. Congratulations again on your promotion."
Something in her voice as she spoke these words tipped me off. That was it. She was angry because Drusus had gotten credit for our mission. He was in my chain of command, and he had therefore gotten the accolades for keeping Earth from certain destruction.
"Thank you, Imperator," Drusus said coldly.
"Can I ask, on behalf of everyone here," she continued, "why you've called this meeting?"
"Certainly. First of all, I have an announcement to make. I've been awarded operational command of Earth's defenses."
Turov smiled, but her teeth were clenched.
"That's wonderful,"
she managed to force out. Drusus turned to me next. He stepped forward, and a tight smile appeared on his face.
"Centurion James McGill," he said. "A legend in his own time."
"Thank you, Equestrian." Drusus gave me a bemused headshake. "It's not entirely good. The legend you've created."
"I'll take it anyway. It's rare enough a man gets credit for anything around here."
Turov's eyes flashed when I said that. She took it as a barb, and it had been meant as one. She was infamous for stealing the thunder of everyone around her. The main reason she was pissed off today was she hadn't managed to convince anyone this solution had been her idea.
"McGill's right,"
Graves said suddenly. Everyone looked at him in surprise. As a general rule, Graves never argued or spoke out of turn when in the presence of superior officers. He was as respectful of authority as he expected his own men to be.
"What do you mean, Primus?"
Drusus asked.
"McGill deserves credit for this astounding scenario, all of it, I mean. The good, the bad, and the extremely bad."
"You're saying that without his influence, the Magua fleet wouldn't be hanging over our heads, like the Sword of Damocles?"
Graves nodded.
"Yes, that. And the deal with the Nerbs. He cut that on the spot without prompting or premeditation."
"A miraculous turn of events," Drusus agreed. "On that point, I am authorized to present Centurion McGill with a commendation."
He produced a small black box. From this box, he extracted a silver four-pointed star. Turov's eyes flew wide. She stared as if mesmerized.
"Is that the Dawn Star?"
she asked in a hushed tone.
"Yes. The ruling council passed the resolution last night in a closed session. For his part in this action, McGill is to be recognized as a planetary hero."
Turov seemed more stunned than I was.
"Here," Drusa said, offering her the sparkling medal. "You can do the honors, as he was below you in the direct chain of command."
This seemed to snap her out of it. She took the medal, and then she looked at Deitch and Graves. It was sometimes customary to pass the duty of bestowing an honor down to the direct commanders, but she passed on that idea. Instead, she took in a deep breath and stepped up to me. I stood at attention, as stunned as anyone else in the room. A medal? I was getting a medal? That just wasn't how things usually worked out for simple old James McGill. The medal was an old-fashioned thing, too. It didn't use nano-adhesives, probably having been manufactured a century ago. The legends said there were only 7 of these medals in existence, and those who held them had to surrender them at death. Opening the clasp on the back, she smiled up at me, and I beamed back down at her.
"Centurion James McGill,"
she began in a formal voice.
I hereby honor you with the Dawn Star. Wear her with pride, honor, and distinction.
Thank you, Impera— I stopped right there because she jabbed the thing into my chest.